Welcome to our discussion segment on the first What If episode. I'm Joe Parker.
And I'm John Streeter.
Let's get started.
Happy summer, Joe.
Yeah, so I'm still waiting for the shoe to be thrown again. I say again because projectiles may or may not have been launched at me at some
point
in our podcast. So I guess to get started, John, what finally broke you down to explore the what ifs after all of our different conversations?
I was looking for a way to have some bonus content in the summer to kind of keep our audience engaged and continue to provide some episodes for you guys. And I thought, you know, you love what if questions so much. I figured let's just get them all out of our system this summer so that in season five, we don't have to deal with any what if questions, though I'm fairly certain that you'll still have one or two of them.
Of course I will.
Yeah.
Of course I will. Absolutely. Well, to get started with this, I guess since the entire episode is a what if episode,
yes,
I have to start with some realities, I guess, would be a kind of a reverse thing. So some of the conclusions that you came to in the episode, at the beginning especially, based on your research of Napoleon, knowing who he was as a man, his character at the time in his life and all this, is there any chance that this could have happened?
Which part? That he would have taken Talleyrand's advice?
Yes, or that he would have taken the advice.
Well, he had taken Talleyrand's advice earlier on, so yes, it's certainly possible. But I think given his stupendous victories on land, he was beginning to buy into his own legend and hype, which is obviously why he ultimately did not listen to Talleyrand and humiliated the Russians, and that led ultimately to the breakdown of relations between Russia and France and to the invasion and all of that.
You did a great extended podcast on the Napoleon, but I can't remember if you talked about his relationship with Alexander the First.
Not really, no.
Okay. What was his beef? I guess, why was there a need to embarrass the Tsar?
Well, it was mainly to... So I should back up. So Alexander was the only other emperor of equivalent status to Napoleon before the war of the, I believe it was the Third Coalition, that culminated with the Treaty of Tilsit. The Austrian emperor, they had the same title, but Austria has already been defeated 2 years earlier. So the only other emperor left on the continent of Europe is Alexander. Napoleon is very interested in status, and so he is going to do his best to humiliate Alexander's armies in the field, and then, as a way of formalizing his superiority over Alexander, is going to force him into the Treaty of Tilsit and the continental system and everything that results from that. So it's really about Napoleon's own ego. There was no military or political or economic reason to do what he did, especially as regards the creation of the Grand Duchy of Warsaw. That was seen as a tremendous insult, not just to Alexander, but to the Russian people, because there's a lot of historical enmity between Russians and Poles, and that just, quite frankly, ticked off the entire Russian nation and so began the breach.
So it boiled down to ego, more or less.
I think so, yes.
Okay. So going with the idea that he would have,
he would have taken... Talleyrand's advice, yes.
You outlined in the podcast that his pathway would have been to confront the Ottoman Empire.
Possibly.
Yeah. So why would that have been his route?
Because that's the only way to get to India. His goal would have been, because again, his great enemy is still Great Britain. If you can't get across the channel, which after Trafalgar, Napoleon couldn't, you attack Great Britain, you weaken Great Britain by taking out its empire. And at that point, the jewel in the British crown was India.
Okay.
And so to get to India from Napoleon's position in Central and Western Europe, you go through Austria, which he had already done, then you go through Ottoman territory in Europe, then you go through Asia Minor, what is today modern-day Turkey, through the Middle East, through Iran, towards India. So it wouldn't have been because he had a beef with the Ottoman Empire. In fact, he was quite friendly with a lot of Ottoman rulers from his early days during the campaign in Egypt. He said great things. He said kind things about the Ottoman leaders, about the Ottoman people, about their religion. He was quite friendly with those people. So we don't know if he would have actually had to fight his way across. It's possible that the Ottomans could have just let him go through. Yeah.
Okay.
Possible.
That certainly would have been better for his... the supply chain.
That's the only way it would have worked, if he had, because as Alexander the Great and other conquerors before and after Napoleon realized, getting through, especially what is now the nation of Iran, just for the purposes of logistics, is almost impossible unless you have, like, airplanes.
Yeah.
Which Napoleon obviously didn't have. Imagine that. Napoleon with tanks and planes. That'd be a fun what if.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Guns of the South kind of thing.
If Napoleon had been able to go through the Ottoman Empire into India, Would Great Britain had expended a lot of resources, in your opinion, to hold on to India?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Because so, by that point, without India, Great Britain is impoverished. With the loss of the North American Empire in the American Revolution, then to lose just 20 years later, India, Great Britain is bankrupt.
Okay. Do you think that logistically, Great Britain would focus more on the lost American colonies rather than India? Or do you think that they would...
Ooh, that's a good question. Because it's certainly closer.
Yeah.
Because you don't have the Suez Canal, so you have to go all the way around Africa. That, you know, that's a really good question. You stumped me already in these what-ifs. Because if the War of 1812 took place, as I talked about in the podcast...
Right, exactly. You inspired
me. It's certainly
me.
Possible that, yeah, they would have said, all right, well, we lost India, assuming Napoleon had been able to conquer it, which I kind of doubt, but... If they were able to, yeah, they might have said, all right, well, we lost India, so let's retake the 13 colonies and use that as the new jewel in our empire. But Great Britain had such a huge industrial and manpower reserve in India itself, I don't know if France would have been able to take it from the British, even if they made it across peacefully across the Ottoman Empire.
Do you think it would have turned into a version of the Russian invasion?
You don't have the weather.
Right, I understand. But so, you do have the heat.
You do have the heat, and you do have the dangerous terrain with the jungles and the mountains of the Hindu Kush. So it's certainly possible that that would have turned into a sort of Russian-style debacle for Napoleon. But I think it's more likely that he simply would have lost too many men to the British at that stage. Because Great Britain, most of its army that was not in Europe fighting in the Peninsular War was stationed in India, and they had a huge amount of soldiers and equipment and weaponry and all of that based in India. I also think that if Napoleon had tried that, Great Britain would have crossed the channel and invaded France itself.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah.
Because
that's how you stop him, ultimately. Yeah, you take Paris. And
if he has a large amount of forces committed to India's invasion, which he would have to do.
That far away.
Yeah. He wouldn't be able to counterattack for a long time. And he would be doing so with an exhausted army.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's more likely if there was a French invasion of India that there would be a British invasion of France.
So,
or some part of continental Europe. Maybe not in France. Maybe they would just go up through Spain. His best chance would have been take Talleyrand's advice, forge a true, genuine alliance with the Russians, let the Russians take out India,
okay,
which they wanted to do. Russia has long coveted Central Asia and India. And Napoleon focus on the Peninsular War in Spain and ultimately crippling Britain that way, especially if then America jumped in with the War of 1812, Napoleon allies with the United States, and they've then got Great Britain virtually surrounded.
Wow. You talked about Prussia just in the sense of Germany and how it evolved, how that would have changed. Is that something that you agree with? Do you think that the German spirit would have evolved to something different?
Oh boy, that's a big question. It really depends on your interpretation of like the German national character and German history. A lot of historians in the past have subscribed to what's called the Sonderweg or the special path, which is a direct line from Martin Luther and the Protestant Reformation and then the Peasants' War, which we've talked about before in this podcast, straight through all the way to Hitler, and that Germany was, from its inception as a national race, not as a nation, but as a single unified race of people, that they were militaristic and martial and that they had a drive to conquest. The Peasants' War, straight through to the creation of Prussia and all of that. If you subscribe to the Sonderweg, if you believe that Germany is inherently a martial society at that point, then yes, the defeat of Prussia would have been, in 1805 and the subsequent holding down of Prussia for the next century by France, would have probably purged the Prussians and the Germans generally of their martial tendencies.
Wow.
Now, I happen to think the Sonderweg has a lot of problems. I'm not a professional historian when it comes to specifically the history of Prussia and of Germany, so I don't have the knowledge to say that it is definitively wrong, but I think it ignores several periods in which Germany was not characteristically, as a people, not a country, fairly peaceful. So if you think that Germany is always lusting after blood, yeah, maybe this what-if would make sense. I think that Germany is perfectly capable, as the history of the country and the race since 1945 has proven, they're perfectly capable of restraining their own violent tendencies. So the bottom line is, I don't know whether that theory would have held true, but I think it would have been in some ways better for the subsequent history of the world if France had been able to hold down Prussia and to check Germany's tendency for war, which was present in the 19th and certainly the early 20th century.
Historically, when people have when people in history have built empires that have spread across the world, generally those eventually fall apart just because they're challenging to manage.
Yeah.
With Napoleon's policies and the improvements that he enacted in France that we talked through this past season, do you see or would you see him implementing similar policies? And do you think that that would prolong France's control over those territories?
If he could hold down the nationalist tendencies of the people of Central and Eastern Europe, that is the great question. Because let's say, again, he takes Talleyrand's advice, we get a genuine peace and not a, basically a cold war between Russia and France. They divide Europe. The Russians were brutal at holding down their nationalities. They always have been. So that's taken care of. So that takes care of Poland, White Russia, the Ukraine, etc. for that time. If Napoleon can introduce the Napoleonic Code, can introduce his legal reforms, abolish serfdom, and keep nationalism from taking hold in Germany especially, but also in Italy, then there is a chance that his policies are successful and he is able to establish generational control. Not necessarily military control, but certainly political control emanating out of Paris across most of Western and Central Europe.
Let's assume he was able to do that.
Yeah.
How many generations do you think he could do
that? I have no idea.
I'm gonna gamble here and say maybe two or three at most. Only because I think through eventually that nationalism does emerge, right? I mean, when you look at the history of the world,
existed before the revolution in France, kind of like the Romantic movement that we talked about last season. Napoleon would have held it down, held it at bay for a while, but it probably would have eventually resurfaced. And you would have had a unifying, occupying force that the nationalists could direct their efforts towards. So when it did reemerge, it probably would have been even more virulent than it actually was.
So in the podcast, it was interesting that you brought up possible economic changes or changes in economic theory.
Mm-hmm.
Would they have progressed or regressed in with Karl Marx and so on?
Right.
When you think about that, how would, in your opinion, Adam Smith's theories have applied in this new world?
Well, Napoleon was not a free market kind of person. And so he wouldn't have taken on much of Karl Marx. He was more of a mercantilist. He was more of what today we would call a populist, which is give the people what they want. The people in France wanted low taxes on the lower middle class, massive taxes on the upper class. So you would have had more of that, what today you would call a progressive tax system. So Smith's ideas would have still have existed, obviously, in Great Britain. Great Britain, if they were facing genuine defeat at the hands of the French, they probably would have become more free market as a way of building up their industrial and their economic strength as a counter to French political and military might. So you would have seen the development of modern day capitalism or free markets probably a little bit earlier in Great Britain. And you also would not have seen it develop on the European continent until France was willing to admit that its mercantile system is not really working all that well and adopt a free market system. Historically, that happens in the 1850s, I believe it was, under Napoleon III with the Cobden Chevalier Treaty, in response to the growing might of Prussia. Assuming that you don't have that Prussian threat, it probably would have taken 1870s, 1880s before France finally realized, let's try a free market system. Or maybe not. Or maybe they would have seen Great Britain's success and been like, hey, let's try this.
Going back to the question about the nationalism, if this new world existed, do you think that that would hinder or help the rise of communism or something like that? Because the way that I'm thinking about it is, if anything was going to emerge to fight back against the New World Order, it would be the nationalism, not specifically like an outlying theory. Would you agree with that or not?
I'm not sure I follow. Because communism is a response to the Industrial Revolution and the excesses of that system where the rich are holding on to everything and not even trying to take care of the poor and the middle class.
I suppose my point or the question is would people instinctively try and revert things back how they were, or would they try and push things in a different direction entirely? If they were going to rebel against France's ownership of their territory, would they rebel in a way that was saying, hey, we wanted to go back how it was, or would you think...
I would imagine that it would be more of a, let's try to create our own system. Let's try to create our own independent countries.
Okay.
Especially in Prussia and Austria and the smaller states of Germany. I don't think there would be a nationalism in the sense of we are all Germans, let's create one Germany. It would be, okay, we used to be part of the Kingdom of Prussia, let's restore Prussia. Who cares about the Hanoverians and the Bavarians and the Baden-Württembergers and all of that? Let's recreate an independent, sovereign Prussia in our part of Europe.
Okay. And I was asking about communism specifically, even though it was named under Marx, forms of it have come up in the past. So I just wanted, I didn't know if it's something like that, even though it didn't have a name back then.
Well, it was in the free market countries where communism first arose as a response to the excesses of the first industrial revolution. So if you don't have an industrial revolution, or you have an industrial revolution moderated by government-imposed mandates that take care of the poor and the middle class like Napoleon had, you probably don't have the rise of communism in French-dominated Germany where Marx would have grown up.
Sure.
So I don't know that Marx would have been, I don't think we would call it Marxism. I think you might call it Owenism for the Scottish socialist Robert Owen. I think that could be it. Yeah. And it would probably, if that had been the case, it would have been a much milder form because Robert Owen was not interested in gulags and concentration camps and anything like that.
Okay. So, John, as a historian, somebody who gets these questions a lot, as you stated in the podcast, mm-hmm. is there any place, as you study and as you teach, where asking the what if is beneficial for you to try and think through the process of why things happen?
What ifs are always beneficial.
Okay.
Because they force me and they force anyone who's exercising their brain in this way to go beyond the timeline and to look at motivations, to look at individual characters, to ask questions like, would Napoleon, based on who he was as a man, have done X, Y, or Z? So I think that counterfactual history, what if history, is invaluable. Not because it leads us, you know, to create this multiverse where you have all these different things happening. This is not a Marvel exercise.
Which sounds kind of cool, yeah, but...
No, but it allows me as a historian to understand the people who are involved and to consider paths not taken as a reflection of who they were as men and women who shaped the history of our world.
Right. It also inspires a lot of grace as friends ask friends questions.
Yeah,
what if this
true.
Happened?
That's true. So
excited to go through this.
Yeah, these are going to be fun. I'm looking forward to this little summer series that we have.
Excursion.
So yeah. Speaking.
Thank you for joining us in our discussion of the first What If episode. I'm Joe Parker.
And I'm John Streeter.
Please leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. It really does help. Thanks, and we'll talk to you soon.